Good afternoon. We are still continuing a tour of New York, so I don't know how many of you are from New York, but by the end of this conference, you can say that you know a little bit about prenatal care in New York, and now I'm hoping that we are going to expand it to the other end of the spectrum. We're going to talk about birth outcomes, and you've heard about two counties in New York, both of which are rural, and we are going to be talking today about birth outcomes and policy implications, and we're analyzing all counties of New York in order to do that because, as you know, policy has to be done at the county level. So Dr. Atav and I have no relationships to disclose. By way of introduction, worldwide each year, so we'll start with the big picture, nearly 13 million babies are born less than 37 weeks gestation. The majority of these infants are either low birth weight or very low birth weight. If we bring it to the United States, the rate of preterm birth has increased greater than 30% since 1981, and you just heard that we already are not meeting our Healthy People 2010 or 2020 goals, and that has been occurring since way before 1981. Also in the United States, the rate of low birth weight is 6%, and because very low birth weight is encouched in the low birth weight data, 1.6% of the 6% are very low birth weight. And now let's talk about New York again. Every week in New York, according to the March of Dimes, 400 babies are low birth weight. So when I say the word low birth weight, in case you aren't aware, it's less than 2,500 grams or 5.5 pounds at birth. 73 babies are very low birth weight, which is less than 3.3 pounds or 1,500 grams at birth. And now you really don't see this reported in the literature very much because this is a variable unique to our study. So what happens to the babies who are born 3.3 to 5.5 pounds, and there are 327 of them every week in New York State, and what can we do for them from a policy perspective? So we chose to call that low birth weight, but not very low birth weight. These birth outcomes are costly. If you see 2005, you know, with our economic downturn and everything that's been happening, the modest cost, the average cost of $51,600 per infant in 2005 is not what you would see today. And yet in 2005, it cost the United States as a whole greater than $26 billion. But this isn't only costly with money. This is costly to families, because these are families who have infants who have increased need. And so they have increased numbers of doctor appointments, physical therapy appointments, occupational therapy appointments. And whether they're done in the home or whether they take them someplace, they take time. And they are very needy infants. But it's also costly to society because they live in counties and they live in communities who want to provide care for these infants and they want to have the programs necessary for their benefit, and yet it's very difficult to be able to provide all of that. The purpose of this study was to examine the effects of various socioeconomic and demographic factors on alternative measures of birth outcomes in New York State counties, in particular for those who are low birth weight, very low birth weight, and then our very special variable low birth weight, but not very low birth weight. The purpose also is to describe findings that lead to unique policy and program recommendations for the prevention and reduction of these birth outcomes. So you see on the screen something that does not look new to you right now because you just saw a picture of all the counties of New York State. However, the map on the left is percentages of low birth weight from 2003 to 2006, and the map on the right is the same for very low birth weight. And what I want you to see is that the counties who suffer from highest percentages of one birth outcome, shown by the darkest pink, don't necessarily suffer from highest of the second outcome. And so if you're designing a policy or a program to meet very low birth weight infants, you may not capture the low birth weight categories in their entirety. Factors that add to the burdens of low birth weight, very low birth weight, and low birth weight but not very low birth weight include where you live, your age. So we all know adolescence. And I'm sad as I stand here today to tell you that advanced maternal age is greater than 35. Because I gave that up long ago. Ethnicity and race. The literature is replete with support for the fact that the black population has the highest percentages of low birth weight. Level of education, access to care that you have just heard about now quite a bit. Providers per county, all forms of substance abuse, and different levels of socioeconomic status. There are gaps in the literature because the studies examine individual factors that contribute to these, but they don't necessarily look at policy-related issues, and there are no studies that have evaluated contributing factors for these problems of the categories of low birth weight at the county level for all counties of New York. So the research questions were we examined many predictors to answer the following research questions. And the first part of the question is the same for each of them. What is the relationship between demographic factors, socioeconomic factors, and level of health services? And for question number one, low birth weight with its definition, very low birth weight, and low birth weight but not very low birth weight, and this was among all 62 New York counties. This was an ex post facto analysis of a secondary data set. It utilized a descriptive correlational design, and you can see the public domain websites where we obtained our data for all counties in New York State. Outcome variables. For New York counties, the analysis was conducted to explain a portion of the variation for the birth outcomes that by now are quite familiar to you. The variables from the data set were grouped theoretically into three categories of predictors. The first is demographic predictors. Now, I know you've heard about demographics twice already, and some of these are looking very, very familiar to you, so I know you can pass the quiz at the end. So demographic predictors, location, percentage of black population, drug-related newborn discharges, percent of graduates from two-year colleges, percentage of out-of-wedlock live births, teen pregnancy rates, and advanced maternal age birth rate. And then socioeconomic predictors were the percentage of poverty for all ages, not just pregnant people, the rate of unemployment, the percentage of Medicaid coverage in 2006, and then there were health service predictors, the percentage of late or no prenatal care, neonatal or pediatric intensive care beds, because if you're familiar with this population of infant, you know that they occupy those beds. Medicaid and PCAP providers per 100,000. Now, I know the PCAP program has slid under the Medicaid umbrella, but at the time this data were reported, it had not done that yet. So the hypothesis was that those counties in New York that are more rural have fewer neonatal and pediatric intensive care beds per person, have higher percentages of late or no prenatal care, higher percentages of Medicaid coverage for live births, higher percentage of out-of-wedlock births, higher percentage of population under the poverty line, lower levels of education, higher black population rate, higher rates of drug-related newborn discharges, fewer Medicaid and PCAP providers, higher rates of unemployment, higher teen pregnancy rates, higher advanced maternal age birth rates will have higher rates of these categories of low birth weight. So this is a busy slide. This is the summary of the findings via multiple regression. On the left is the list of predictors. We just talked about them in the various categories in which they fell. And then you see the three outcome variables on the right, and you can see the R-squared, which tells us how much the significant variables explained of that proportion of birth outcome. And if it's a minus, the relationship did not go in the expected direction. If it's a plus, it did. If there's a star, it's significant. So you know from research that if it's not significant, it really doesn't matter. So we are going to address the significant outcomes and make policy recommendations for them. The first is teen pregnancy rate, and this one explained a portion of the variance for low birth weight and low birth weight, but not very low birth weight. And so in answer to that, there are some possible policy and program recommendations. The first is school-based clinics. Now, you just heard the stats from Tioga and Herkimer counties related to prenatal care and clinics, but this is school-based clinics. So if we have a pregnant adolescent, then we can capture the adolescents who aren't going to the clinics, because these are in the schools and they provide education about pregnancy prevention, the provision of comprehensive prenatal care. They facilitate higher rates of high school graduation because these are adolescents who are now not missing school. You're all familiar with the Women, Infant, and Children program that provides the nutritionally based care, not only during pregnancy, but postpartum periods and for the children as they age. SCHIP and CHIP. So SCHIP is State Children's Health Insurance Program, which is a matching funds program. It actually comprehensively provides health care through the age of 19 for the child. And then CHIP had a reauthorization act in 2009 with an extra $32.8 billion to maintain it through 2013, allowing 65 million children to be covered. And then parenting classes and prenatal care through group settings. Drug-related newborn discharges was another significant variable. It explained a portion of the variance for low birth weight and very low birth weight. So counseling programs at whatever level that they are to help maintain a drug-free lifestyle for the pregnant woman, whether it's preconception, whether they're community-based, whether it targets their substance abuse. And whatever you think about needle exchange programs, if we want to prevent women from reusing a dirty needle, we need a needle exchange program. And so that helps to protect the health of the mother and the health of the developing fetus. Clinics that provide free care for pregnant substance abusers, and then our methadone clinics, because we do not want heroin-addicted moms. Rate of unemployment explained a portion of the variance for low birth weight and very low birth weight. So when we look at that, if we have schools that provide broader educational opportunities for advancing our academic skills, our technical skills, trade skills. Remember, this is a county-level study. This is not individual. And so we're looking at everybody in the county, and we want to improve our rate of unemployment at the county level. Adult education programs that advance skills. So perhaps you have people who have lost their jobs, so they need to be retrained, or some that need to have another job that will improve their skills in order to advance. Programs that improve infrastructure that will attract small business owners, and of course affordable health insurance programs for our working poor, our uninsured, and our underinsured. Now the next two are interesting because these two popped up as being significant only for low birth weight but not very low birth weight. So our little guys that are 3.3 to 5.5 pounds at birth. There are two interpretations for Medicaid coverage for live births. The first is that if you can increase the percentage of Medicaid coverage, then perhaps the pregnant woman may have better comprehensive prenatal care and allow the infant to grow large enough that the infant would be greater than 5.5 pounds, therefore not one of the categories of low birth weight. And yet you just heard we need to get over that stigma of having Medicaid coverage. But, you know, at least in the second and third trimesters, perhaps they've gotten over it. Decreasing Medicaid coverage would result in decreased percentages of low birth weight but not very low birth weight according to the results of multiple regression, but as you know, that won't make any sense from a policy level. The following programs are instrumental for uninsured, underinsured, and working poor pregnant populations. We've talked about SCHIP, CHIP, and WIC, and Medicaid programs. And the other one was Medicaid providers that popped up for low birth weight but not very low birth weight. So you're probably familiar with the fact that there are lots of programs for doctors, new grads. They provide grants for them. The grants help them to start clinics in underserved areas so they can practice there while they receive competitive pay, and their education loans are repaid. So why don't we have that for our nurse practitioners, our midwives, and our nurse anesthetists? We need something like that because these are people who really embrace underserved rural areas and they love to work there, and yet the availability for them to do that financially is not there. And then establishment of family clinics that provide prenatal care in rural areas, and of course maybe the stigma could be removed if we have Medicaid funding to be more acceptable in our prenatal clinics. This study contributed in a few ways. The first is with policy. It presented a unique effort at weaving concepts from nursing, rural sociology, political science, It demonstrated that we can find solutions for poorer birth outcomes, but in order to do that, we have to integrate alternative approaches from a multitude of disciplines. It can't just be from one source. And then we look at analyses. And based on analyses, public health nurses can make better recommendations for social policies that contribute to better birth outcomes for counties. And this one is worded almost the same, except that as we apply it to nursing, the findings from the analyses. So somebody conducts the analyses, and then the nurses take these findings, run with them, and they are the people who talk to those in power and make these very important recommendations. This study demonstrated that a nursing research study can make an insightful contribution toward aggregate level outcomes analyses with unique perspectives for policy recommendations. But the most significant contribution is this study's ability to interpret social policy data at the aggregate level from a nursing perspective, not from the individual level. And this perspective synthesizes the intimate and in-depth understanding of birth outcomes in the clinical realm. So we take our clinical, we incorporate it into the policy realm at the aggregate level. It is this nursing outlook on health outcomes that contributes uniquely to the literature in a manner that other policy disciplines cannot. Thank you.